Welcome to the bike show with me, Jack Thurston. Now, I really hope you're enjoying the heat wave that we're having in the British Isles. It's been incredibly hot for the last week, and the weather forecast says that there's no sign that it's going to stop being hot for another week. And I've just taken a little lunchtime spin, about 20 minutes out of Abergavenny, downstream along the River Usk to a spot that I like. I usually swim up by the road bridge, but this time I've crossed a couple of fields and I've taken my bike over a couple of stiles, and I'm at a very secluded place. And my intention is to dunk myself in the water and cool off. It's something I've been doing, well, I've been trying to do it every day. There's a fish just jumped out of the river. My God, is that one of the trout that this river's famous for, I wonder? I've been trying to get a swim in every day, and I think I've managed every day but one. But you're not here to listen to me jumping in the River Usk. You're here for the bike show. This episode of the bike show is a very good reminder that it's not always sunny blue skies and 30 degrees of heat in the British summer. Quite often it's terrible weather, and it was quite terrible weather for part of a ride I did last August in Preston, well, starting in Preston. And I was up in Preston at the invitation of an artist who lives there. His name is Gavin Renshaw, and I'll tell you a bit about him in a minute. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Preston. Preston is a small city in the northwest of England, in the county of Lancashire. It was made a city in 2002. It has a population in the city of about 130,000 people, but in the wider urban area, anywhere between 300,000 and 400,000 people. It's traditionally a heart of industry and trade, dating back to the Industrial Revolution and before that, medieval times. And it's a city that's got transport in its DNA. It was the first place to manufacture trams in Britain, and it went on to become the biggest manufacturer of trams in the UK, and its factories also built trains and aircraft. The first ever traffic cones were used in Preston, and the first ever motorway, which would later become the M6, was built around Preston in 1958. Preston's concrete bus station is hailed by architecture aficionados as one of the most significant brutalist buildings in the UK, and it's quite a sight. Preston is also home to the University of Central Lancashire, and that university has a really interesting project called In Certain Places. That is an attempt to bring more imaginative thinking to the process of city planning, really, and urban development. And as part of that project, an artist called Gavin Renshaw has been looking at cycling, but he's also been looking at how the city relates to itself visually and to its surrounding areas. And that's what we talk about a lot on our ride, as well as experiencing some of Preston's bicycle infrastructure. And it does have some bicycle infrastructure. It's not famous for it, but there's quite a bit of it, and we rode a sample of it as well. So let me tell you a little bit about Gavin and the work he does. And this is what it says on the In Certain Places website. Gavin Renshaw's practice is concerned with topography, local histories, and the ability to interact and respond to the city, predominantly in regard to its architectural infrastructure. Often associating with outsider art and graffiti culture, he explores the topophilia associated with place in an attempt to strike an unspoken dialogue between the established and the divergent. This analysis can take the form of photography, painting, map-making, and print. So that is a lot of art speak, and if you understood all of that, then congratulations. But Gavin has a background in graffiti, in skateboarding, and his art draws upon those traditions in quite interesting ways. But you can check him out on Instagram, and he's got a website as well. I'll put links to that on the bike show's website. We talk a bit about his art, but this project that he's working on is a bit more conceptual, I suppose, trying to develop a different way of looking at the city. We had an interesting ride out of the city into the countryside and back again. So by the magic of technology, I'm going to take you back in time and from the banks of the River Usk in Monmouthshire to the banks of the River Ribble in the city of Preston, where I go for a ride with Gavin Renshaw. I'm going to dunk myself in the river here now, and I'll catch you on the other side.
We're here now in Preston, literally over the top of the River Ribble, which the source of it is up at Ribble's Head, which is it's kind of the catchment of the three Yorkshire peaks. So it's Whernside, Penigent and Ingleborough, which is really nice actually to think that the, you know, that's where this river starts that we live alongside, and obviously then goes out into the Ribble estuary maybe 10 miles further downstream. But it's still all tidal up to this point, and we will be heading slightly west out onto the Fylde, and then we'll head more inland and towards upland, so towards Scorton. We'll go over the trough into the Forest of Bowland, and then we'll skirt round through Whitewell and hopefully jump back on the Guildwheel east of Preston and roll back to where we are now. So it'd be a kind of nice maybe 100 kilometre loop.
Would this have been a kind of
This is a really early bridge. This is one of the, I think it's one of the first bridges, to be honest, in Preston. When I went into the archive at the Harris and I looked through old drawings and paintings of Preston, this bridge features quite heavily because obviously this whole area was agricultural and quite rural. None of these buildings were here. And it kind of, the park, which wasn't really a park then again, was all kind of agricultural land. So it was a real vista from Penwitham, which sits a little bit higher up than Preston, and then Preston sits up on the escarpment. What's quite amusing is you can kind of tell when particular styles were becoming popular, and I've seen pictures then where it looks like it's done in Italian style. If you look at it, it looks like Preston is somewhere in the north of Italy, which just looks ridiculous. So there's all kind of almost like cypress trees, and the boats are kind of in like this Viennese style and things. So it's ridiculous, but you can see how artists were influenced by what they were seeing from Europe and then tried to produce the same style for places like Preston, which, as you can probably imagine, is ridiculous.
So do you get boats coming up and down here? Is it navigable at this point?
You do sometimes at high tide. It's a rare sight. It is a very rare sight. But that said, again, I've seen footage from Victorians, them crazy Victorians, where there's tons and tons of boats in the river. So the whole boating, you know, as a pastime was huge then. And you know, like I said, looking back through the archive, you can see that, but you don't see it much nowadays. What you do often get in summer is you get somebody wakeboarding or jet skiing, which is a bit worrying because actually we've just heard that there's otters back in the river, we've not seen for a while, which is really nice.
So you're an artist and a cyclist, and in all my years of doing the bike show, I've been surprised at how many, well, not surprised actually, kind of gratified and delighted at how many people are artists and also cyclists. But you don't have to be a cycling artist, and in fact most people who are artists who ride a bike, they're just artists who ride a bike. Where do you fit into this whole thing, because you're an artist and you ride a bike?
Yeah, I think it probably stems from my interest throughout my life in kind of architecture. I've slowly realized that cycling then has affected my work and the way I think about architecture, because I think when I look at architecture, it's not just buildings, it's architecture in the loosest form of the term. So I consider things like roads as part of the architecture of a place. I think architecture is more to do with almost shape and form and not so much about the classic image of a building. So I'm using the term architecture in a very loose way.
What kind of art do you make?
And my art is always very visual. I know that's still keeping it very broad, but given that artists nowadays work in an infinite amount of ways, I think in that kind of respect, I'm still quite a traditional artist. So I'm still working in a visual way, and often, you know, aesthetics play into the work. So it's not very conceptual in to that degree.
So there are people cycling in Preston. I saw a few as I rode over to your place. What is the state of cycling in Preston in 2017?
When I first came to Preston, it was coming from North Wales, where we cycled a lot, and I think it was just an easy way to get about, especially if you're young and you don't have a car. Coming to Preston then, I kind of noticed that there wasn't anyone cycling, or not that I saw within the city. But I think over the years, it's slowly grown and grown, and things like the Guild Wheel, which this bridge kind of joins onto, has really brought cycling back to Preston. I think it's got a really strong grassroots scene, racing scene outside of that, and leisure cycling scene because of the terrain outside of Preston. But within the city centre, it's still quite small, but it is building year on year, I would say. You definitely see more cyclists around and a lot more varied cyclists. So you would see people on recumbents, which you'd never see, or you'd see people on tandems. You see lots more kids out. You see minority groups out. And I think all that then is a really healthy sign that it's growing in the area.
Well, let's hit the road. We've got some miles to do.
Absolutely. We've just come along the Guild Wheel and we're heading west, and we've just stopped off now at Preston Docks, which when it was first built was the largest inland dock in Europe, I think. I think that was quickly exceeded. And now it's just mainly used for like leisure boats, really. I think that they've always had big plans to try and develop it, but it's funding's never really happened. But the one of the great things about this is I think you get a really nice view of the city. So as we go around, you can see St Walburgh's, you get to see PNE, and you can kind of see how the city kind of forms a backdrop to a lot of the lower lands because of the way it sits on the escarpment above the river.
So the Guild Wheel, you've mentioned it a couple of times, and I didn't know what it was before I came to Preston, and we've just ridden along a bit of it, and it's amazing. So tell us what the Guild Wheel is.
The Guild Wheel is kind of the legacy of the 2012 Preston Guild, which is every 20 years Preston has a Guild Festival, and it kind of goes on throughout the whole year. So obviously the last one was 2012, and it's a really, really old festival. I think it's kind of one of the earliest Guild festivals in the country, and Preston makes a really big deal of it. And one of the great things about the last Preston Guild was that we got the Guild Wheel, and actually it's been a great legacy for cycling in Preston. We've seen massive increase in cycling numbers, and also it's now one of our biggest visitors attractions, which is amazing really for just a cycle path that goes around the city. You know, you think of PNE and you think of maybe Brockholes Nature Reserve, but the Guild Wheel brings a massive amount of people here. Yeah, obviously quite local, but it's a real popular thing.
We've just ridden along the river on a very nice, smooth cycle path, but it goes the whole way round the city, does it?
Yeah, so it's a 21-mile greenway for cyclists and pedestrians. So it can get busy at times of the weekend, but it's really nice. It's kind of like a leisure cycle path, really. So it's not, people generally take it easy. There's lots of sights along the way. And it's quite varied terrain. There's some parts of it which can be quite challenging, I think, for a cyclist. So it's good. But the idea is that we Prestonians should try and use it as part of their commute. And I think that's where it can kind of get a bit contentious, because it is very much like a leisure path for cycling at a nice leisurely speed, and not really for commuters to whiz down on the way to work. So and hopefully we're getting these spokes, which is... The idea is that the wheel then has these spokes which lead into the city and also out of the city.
So why, for a 20-year festival, or a festival that happens every 20 years that dates back to, I'm guessing, kind of medieval times, why do they decide to do a bicycle path? I mean, that's fantastic, but there must have been some agitation and campaigning or enlightened politicians to alight on that as an idea, because of all the things that they might have done, that is a very particular thing, given the levels of cycling that we have in our country is quite low. Yeah. I suppose people can use it to walk, and that's fine too. But it just strikes me as extremely commendable. But there must be a story of kind of hard work to get it up the agenda over the years.
Yeah, and I don't know the full story behind it, but I know the Guild Wheel Users Group, I think they campaigned for a good 10 years, and they're a really kind of ardent group that would... pushing and pushing and pushing the council, and then I think the funding came into place and it was actually going to go ahead, and then I think that's when they tied it into the 2012 Guild, because it was being constructed before then. It's a 21-mile circuit, so it's quite a, I think it was a big logistical undertaking for Preston that's got very, very limited cycle paths even.
And did it get a lot of coverage? Did, you know, because we got huge coverage of the east-west superhighway in London and, I don't know, I'm trying to think of other places. I guess Bristol gets a bit of national coverage for some of the things it does on cycling. York, Cambridge, these are kind of byword cities for cycling. But Preston, in my experience, is not one that is up there, but maybe it should be.
It's very early days. I think regionally it got a lot of exposure, but I think nationally it's not got the exposure yet, because I don't think that we've seen the numbers yet. I think it's very, very early days for Preston in cycling. I think some people would disagree with me saying that there's a real heartland of cycling that just in throughout the whole of the northwest, but Preston as a city, just talking about the small area of the city, is not generally seen as a cycling mecca by any means. Not like the other places that you named. But hopefully, as we see the numbers increase, you never know. I mean, I think it's got a lot to offer, and it's got some great terrain just outside of it. So, and the Guild Wheel, you can use that. You can use the Guild Wheel to then access all this terrain as well.
We've got a nice view into, I guess, the city centre there, and that massive spire. Is that where you mentioned St Walburgh's?
That's St Walburgh's. Yeah. So it's kind of a real high point of Preston. I think the spire is at like 100 meters. In height, or just under 96 meters or something.
Wow, it's so pointy, isn't it? It's really narrow and pointy. It's like a kind of shard before the shard.
Yeah, and it really sits at like the high point of Preston, so it's a really good indicator when you're out and you're maybe, you know, a good 20 miles out cycling. It's that real prominent thing on the horizon that kind of ties you back home. It's, even though today the light's not hitting it, it's actually quite light, and the light hits it, it's real, it's kind of light stone. So it does look great, and it's kind of framed on the horizon there. But Preston has quite a lot of spires, you know, for quite a small town. It's always been very religious. Preston, I think the name Preston came from priest town, and you'll see a lot of religious names around the town to do with the friary and things, and the monks that first established the town. So that there is a lot of spires, which is really nice when mixed in with the kind of 60s brutalism.
I mean, it's nice to be able to look. It seems to be reasonably flat environments around the city, to be able to look back and sort of orient yourself, especially when you're on a bike, to sort of know, you know, what direction you're meant to be going in, and how far away you are from things. That must be handy. I mean, I definitely remember when I lived in London, tall buildings being quite useful wayfinding cues. So that when they put that one up in Elephant and Castle, mm-hmm. they call the lipstick, whatever it was, and then there was the shard, and you know, they're quite useful to sort of pick them out and almost even triangulate from a couple of spires or a couple of tall buildings to see where you are.
Yeah, and also you get that incredibly deceptive viewpoint where so even though you're looking at this accurate view, buildings kind of look like their positions are adjusting because of the kind of nature of parallax. But what I really like is the fact that it is great to gauge distance, but it's amazing how them distances can kind of be skewed. So you can look at something from afar like Preston, you think, wow, that's really far away, but actually it's probably only going to take you 20 minutes to ride back to it.
Maybe you could have some little tool where you can measure the height of the spire of St Walburgh's, and it will tell you how far away you are from centre of Preston. Isn't that how navigation works at sea? They measure a distance of some star from the horizon.
That's right,
And that tells them something about where they are in the Earth's surface. Very kind of a rudimentary understanding, primary school understanding of
We're kind of really crude navigators of these steel and aluminium ships here. That luckily for us, we haven't got the open seas to navigate. Yeah,
we'd be in trouble.
We'll manage, I think.
All right. Well, let's get a bit further away from these dreaming spires and out into the countryside. Where are we, Gavin?
We're at Calder Vale. We've just come over Oakenclough on a very damp Lancashire morning. Rain's coming down quite consistently. It's not too heavy, but it's quite consistently. And then we didn't get too hot over the climb. But it was. So we're in Calder Vale, which is kind of a very small little industrial hamlet, almost, I suppose you'd say, which is kind of nestled in up in the up on the moors a little bit. And we're going to head towards Harris End Fell, which takes us towards the Trough of Bowland and the Forest of Bowland, which is not too far away now.
So this is late July, and I'm wearing shorts. You're not wearing shorts. So you're letting your Northwesterners down, because you were talking as we were riding up about the hard riding tradition of the Northwest and how you've turned out all these amazing cyclists and how Bradley Wiggins moved up here so he could get hard on the lanes around here. But I mean, it is there is a strong tradition of cycling around here in tights and in shorts in July either.
I think the difference is, Jack, is I didn't actually throw myself in with that bunch. I was just, I was fighting their corner, but I wouldn't certainly put myself in that category. No, I never once said I was a part of the hard men of the Northwest.
But there is
Yorkshire
that
contingency.
There is that tradition.
I think there's the notion of that tradition. I think there is, all over the country, isn't it? It's the same. It's those heavy, wet roads and people that ride all the way through winter on these, and you know, awful rural lanes and over the fells and things. I think it kind of breeds that. It's got that kind of Flandrian sensibilities. Almost.
Well, it's the east-west divide, isn't it? And it's the rainfall in the west of the British Isles is so much more than in the east, that if you are going to get serious about riding your bike in this part of the country, then you are going to have to deal with some quite inclement weather.
Yeah, and obviously I've let the side down, so I'm in tights and a jacket. Got arm warmers on under here as well. It's just standard summer day in Lancashire, really, isn't it? We kind of expected it. I'm sure we'll see some sun at some point today, but it's...
I'm impressed at how easy it was to get out of the city on the route that you picked, because a lot of places have a kind of a central area in the city or the town that is quite cycling friendly, because the cars are a bit under control or going slowly, and then the countryside in the surrounding area is very nice, but you've got this kind of donut of inaccessibility that stops you from getting out there. But we seem to sort of puncture the donut quite well. Is that possible in every direction from Preston to just come out on those kinds of lanes?
There's certainly key arteries, I would say, like what you're talking about, them kind of really busy A roads. We were riding alongside them for a short period of time, and luckily things like the Guild Wheel just carry you across those, which is then, you know, you've only got to cross them and that's you free out.
Yeah, because we were on one point, we were on a beautiful Guild Wheel cycle path beside a busy A road that would be very off-putting to 95% of people. They would not want to ride their bikes on it. And it's great to have that kind of facility.
Yeah, it is. And I think Preston is lucky that, like you said, there is definitely routes out. So there's, like, you know, there's definitely a north route out, and there's a few to the east, and there's quite a few to the south. So there is in all directions. And then I think the Guild Wheel does come into its own for maybe accessing those outer spokes.
And so these buildings in front of us here, I mean, we're in a steep-sided valley with a couple of mobile phone communications masts on the top of the ridge over there, but there is some old massive sheds there. That's not farm sheds, is it? They be using the water to drive some kind of machine or washing something, or what were they doing here?
Being a chimney here, I'm not sure if it was
a mill.
To do with
it be a mill?
A mill or
mill town, isn't
mill
it?
Central,
yeah.
Cottonopolis, yeah.
Is that Preston was at the heart of kind of cotton country?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, especially Victorian Preston was the height of the cotton, you know, cotton production in the UK, probably. And then it moved on as well to paper and things like that. So now that is essentially why the docks were built. It was to bring in them raw materials and to take out the cotton. So yeah, I mean Preston's massive, and you know you've got then the history of like Horrocks and things as dressmaker and fabric maker in Preston. So yeah, the massive tradition and history in cotton in Preston and fabric. It's a fabric town as well as a market town really, but I think it's, you know, the Victorians turned it into that industrial fabric town.
And so it must have got pretty polluted and horrible and overcrowded and difficult in those boom times if you were just an ordinary person living in Preston or having moved to Preston to work in a mill.
Yeah, I think it must have been pretty awful. And obviously then there's things like the famous lockout of the mills that happened where the workers were protesting, and that kind of brought all kinds of people to Preston, really. It meant Karl Marx then wrote about Preston. Because of that, there's then now a monument in the town centre, which is a memorial, which is kind of dedicated to those cotton workers that were then protested, and also that the shots were fired. And
high drama of industrial revolution.
Trouble in the mill, as they say. The chimneys that were in Preston is unbelievable. And you look at the old photographs, and the old pictures. I mean, it was a skyline of chimneys, you know, which must have been quite a sight, you know.
So am I sensing it's easing off a little bit? We're standing under a very magnificent beech tree here, getting a little bit of shelter from the rain. The seagulls are just taken off, so maybe they know something that about the weather. They're heading off to the sunshine over there. Are they heading to Blackpool?
They're heading towards the tiny patch of light that there is in the sky.
They do, don't they?
Yeah, that is definitely Blackpool, actually. And they'll probably reach there by lunchtime, so they know that the chip shops are open. And, yeah, it's ready for business.
So the commuting seagulls.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll go from seagulls, you know, Norman might see a bit more like lapwing, curlew, that kind of things. It'd be nice as we head more into the moorland. Gotta go. I hope you're ready, girls. Take a look outside.
So where are we now?
We're at the top of the Trough of Bowland. Just come over the top from the west. So we're still heading east towards Dunsop Bridge. And the rain is just subsided and it's looking a little bit brighter on the horizon, thank
you. It was quite rough back there. My cotton shorts, my summer shorts are absolutely saturated, and you've shown your wisdom by wearing the leg warmers.
I've just managed to squeeze about half a litre out of my gloves, so it wasn't pretty.
So it's a very nice milestone here, yeah, indicating the boundary, the border between Yorkshire and Lancashire.
It's the what was the old border. So it's I think pre-1974. Where I think this was the boundary, so things like Dunsop Bridge and Sledburn were all in Yorkshire, but then with the boundaries reshuffling, it's become Lancashire.
And what do the people who used to be in Yorkshire who are now in Lancashire think about that? Isn't that a little bit contentious?
I think it probably is. I don't know if they're still here. They probably skipped a few miles east. And, you know, there was a big reshuffle. So, I mean, portions of the Lake District were part of Lancashire then. You know, if you ride up Rhino's Pass, there's a marker there which has the old Lancashire sign on it, because that area there was like the boundary. The old Roman Road was the boundary between Lancashire and Westmorland or Cumberland. I'm not too sure. I think it's Westmorland.
Because it's hard to think of two counties that have got more sort of cause for needle between them than Yorkshire and Lancashire, with the history of the Wars of the Roses and the Yorkists and the Lancastrians. And
absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Although I like to think that the the cycling contingency, it's almost like a bit of a Northern Brotherhood. Maybe that's just me, your wishful thinking. I'm sure all the Yorkshire folk out there might think differently. But yeah, I mean, you often see a lot of riders come over from Yorkshire. And, you know, obviously we dip over the border and go around there because there's some great routes that kind of just dip in and out of both Lancashire and Yorkshire. I did meet a group of fellas up on the Cross of Greet, which is kind of the highest road in Lancashire, but then as soon as you go over the top, you dip into Yorkshire. And they'd come over from, I can't remember where, maybe Leeds Way. And they said, oh, we were quite surprised how hilly it was over. We kind of thought Lancashire was flat. And to be honest, if you think about it, probably before some of the boundaries got shuffled, a lot of it was kind of flat until you got to where the lakes is now. So we've kind of gained a few hills.
Yeah, there's a couple of plaques over here as well, aren't there?
Yeah. So we've got Bill Bradley, Southport CC, 1933 to 1997, international racing cyclist. Tour of Britain winner 1959 and 1960. And he loved to ride through this area. And also legendary cyclist Jack Thompson, 1913 to 2004. So good innings.
Yeah, so they were from the real heyday of racing. In the, I guess Jack Thompson would have been in the 30s and 40s. And Bill Bradley, I guess, 50s and 60s.
Kind of Tom Simpson.
Yeah, international racing cyclist.
Yeah.
That's a good calling card.
Southport is, yeah, I think they've always had a really strong scene around Southport, and you often see a lot of the Southport CC guys over this way, so it's obviously a popular route for them. And it really is, again, very close to Preston. It's only, 10 or 15 miles or so. So,
is this a kind of ancient pass, an ancient way?
Yeah,
kind of drovers and traders and...
Yeah, so
priests and pilgrims and I don't know what it feels like. It we were in this sort of pass here, kind of deep pass, and there's a great big ridge over to one side.
I think that this was basically the easiest route from Pendle and the kind of East Lancs over to Lancaster, which was where obviously then people were getting tried. So for instance, like the Pendle Witches, they were taken then from Pendle and walked basically exactly this route to Lancaster Castle, and hence the Langdale Castle, which is just further down the Trough Road. It was probably a stopover point for them on route, and hence why it got its name Castle, even though it doesn't really look...
Who were the Pendle Witches?
You're putting me on the spot.
I mean, what were they like? They would like so witches in the sort of Salem witch trials type of thing.
I'm not a witch expert, but I think it was around the early 1600s. And I think there was around 9, maybe. And as far as I know, so a lot of speculation here, I think it was one of the things where it all started from just like a dispute in the street. And somebody killed a cow or something, or a sheep, or a horse. And obviously somebody killed a horse. And
escalated quickly.
Escalated. And then off you pop, you marched all the way to Lancaster via the Trough Road in there.
And hung
on Gallows Hill, I think, yeah.
Have you heard the theory about witches that they were people who were getting unintentionally high on ergot, which is kind of very much, which is basically like LSD. And it occurs in grain that is being stored in damp conditions. It's a kind of fungus, and it has psychotropic kind of properties, and they basically, poor people in damp areas, eat this grain that's gone a bit rotten or got fungal growth on it, and they kind of start tripping as if they're on acid and raving, and people think they're a witch and burn them. And they've done some map of all the witchcraft cases in the medieval times and the sort of places where you might get ergot fungal contamination of the grain stores. Yeah. And it sort of matches up.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I'm happy to say in the classic way, I saw the movie The Witches and realised that that is essentially the premise behind the film. On,
oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I think this is something on the this is something on the History Channel.
You've maybe found out the proper way. I saw it through Hollywood.
No, oh, good. Oh well, I'm glad they took that and ran with it.
Yeah.
No, that's interesting. I mean, it kind of feels. It's slightly tragic that
you know
you basically get high unintentionally and then get burned or drowned.
Yeah.
There must have been something else going on.
I remember reading The Crucible at school. It was kind of on the book list, and so you kind of see how, and the way that society is today, it's very easy for accusations to be thrown around and for things to be believed, and all of a sudden you find yourself getting marched to Lancaster. It'd be incredibly easy to imagine. And then when you throw in something like ergot, then it's
maybe they were just a classic out group, like we are in modern Britain, as people who ride bikes.
We're heading the wrong way, but we might get shepherded back the other way before the day's out.
You go through red lights.
What
riding
are
two
doing
abreast
out here, you two soppy sodden. Oh, I'm glad to see we're not the only people who are going to be marched back to Lancaster.
Yeah, here comes a fellow cyclist in shorts. Yeah, I hasten to add.
Yeah, all right, definitely.
All right.
All right.
Yeah.
You doing? You all right?
That gentleman is riding a Ribble bicycle. And are they from that? I mean, Ribble clearly is the river that goes through Preston. Is Ribble Cycles in Preston?
Yeah, Ribble was based in Preston. It's now, I think the warehouse is up at Walton Liddell, which is just outside of Preston. And obviously, like, long time in the cycling industry. I think then sponsored Chris Boardman back when he was going for our record, or was it Olympics?
I don't know what their lineage is, but I know that you do see a lot of it is a name in British cycling, Ribble.
Yeah, it is, and it's based just outside of Preston. It's been Preston based, I think, from the word go. I think by all accounts they make really, really good bikes. I mean, you know, you kind of look at them and you think they've kind of got that portion of the market cornered, but you do see them everywhere. And what's nice now is, I think, even though you think of it as kind of like bit of a mass-produced bike to a certain degree, some of the old Ribbles that you see now are quite desirable, you know, to look at. I quite like the old steel, you know.
Yeah,
old,
I mean, I guess there must have been a point where they were making them themselves here rather than having them made in Taiwan or China or wherever, because they're basically badged up bikes from the Far East, like every bike is these days. Mm. But.
And also you've got things like then Dolan, who are Ormskirk, which is not too far away. It's just hop, skip and a jump between here and Merseyside, really, just past Southport. So there is that kind of definite bicycle industry.
All right, it's raining again, so let's get moving. I'm going to get cold. Well, we're inside a cafe, which is we're in the Puddle Ducks Tea Room.
Yeah.
And what's the village here?
This is Dunsop Bridge. So it's the apparently the geographical centre of Great Britain.
Yeah, as it's being advertised on the tea towels, which are available as souvenirs.
Yeah.
I've had a very good, we both had soup, which is what we needed, I think. A broth to warm us up. And I've just supplemented that with a Bakewell tart, a slice of Bakewell tart and some ice cream. And lots of tea.
Lots and lots of tea to warm us up. I'm actually feeling like I can almost feel my toes now, Jack. I don't know about you. Definitely getting there. The damp, but the warm.
Everyone who rides a bike has got a journey that they have made to become the cyclist that they are today. What's your journey as a cyclist?
I remember some of my earliest memories were in East Manchester, and my
Dad got me a rally budgie. So this would be in the 70s, and I was very young, maybe 4 or 5 years old. And that was my first bike, and I think it lasted me for years until I begged him to basically upgrade me to a new bike. And I think that was then when the BMX craze started. It kind of swept across Britain. Unfortunately, never had the rally burner that I wanted, but you know. So, but I did get the BMX, and then being in North Wales, the mountain bike kind of movement was coming over from California, and we definitely got in there early because we were so, you know, kind of living around mountains and that kind of mountain culture. So we instantly got mountain bikes and started riding them all over North Wales and racing mountain bikes. And I just remember that was me. I was absolutely happy. I never wanted a car. I was just happy on my bike. I remember saying to my dad that I never wanted to get a car. I'm just happy on my bike. I remember at school, the teachers were shocked when we wanted to do our Duke of Edinburgh Award, but we wanted to do it on mountain bikes. And I don't think they actually knew what mountain bikes were at that time, and then they had to kind of consult lots of different bodies to decide whether we could do it or not. But we did, and it was really good, apart from that we didn't have a clue we're touring, and we ended up with rucksacks on our backs with all our camping gear and, yeah, really bad necks by the end of a long weekend. But it was it's all a learning curve, and slowly I started, even though I was loving mountain biking and riding mountain biking, all that was on the TV in the 80s was the Tour de France. So you kind of start picking up road cycling, and you know, my interest in road cycling was kind of gathering. And as I was getting a little bit older, I saw that, you know, distance was kind of interesting. Watching Miguel Indurain and you know, Claudio Capucci was like king of the mountains, that kind of thing. So then I decided I was going to get a road bike and see what that was all about as well. And that just kind of launched me off in a different direction. And at that time, I think mountain biking was getting all kind of tricked out. Everyone was going for the lightest possible parts and anodized colours. And that really wasn't me. So I think it was almost like the right time to kind of just put mountain biking to the side for a minute and pick up road cycling. Both great for different reasons, really.
And how about what we call rather disparagingly utility cycling, kind of getting around on a bike? Is that something that you've always done? Because there's that funny period, I think, for a lot of people. Maybe they ride a bike at university, if they go to university, and certainly as a teenager, because they haven't got access to a car. But then, you know, mid-20s, people put the bike to one side, and it's only when you become a middle-aged man in Lycra that they're back out on the bike. But did you manage to keep it going?
I think there was a little bit of time through university. It was when I first moved to Preston, and I noticed that there wasn't as many bikes around in the, this was mid-90s, compared to at home, you know, where we'd just be out on our bikes all the time. I'd see people on bikes, and it was kind of that outdoor culture was more obviously really prevalent. And it's ridiculous to think that something like that wasn't in Preston. I think I was a bit maybe insular at university, and maybe imagined that that wasn't happening. I'm sure it was out in the fells. It was just as strong as what it was in North Wales. But I certainly felt like there wasn't as much of a place for the bicycle. So I did leave it for a few years, but I think it was kind of like my mid to late 20s, I picked it back up, and I realised that actually there's all this terrain that's around me that I don't really know about and need to discover it. And I'm not going to do that in a car, I want to do it by bicycle. That was just the natural thing. So I brought my mountain bike initially and started exploring, you know, Beacon Fell, which is only 6 miles out of Preston, and then went further afield. And yeah, from there, then you pick up the road bike and off you go, and you're over into, you know, you're talking counties, and rather than just, you know, the all these little regional places that you go. So,
and so do people who know you think of you as Gavin the cyclist? You know, oh, he's always on a bike, or you know, oh, has he turned up on a bike again? You know, are you known, or is it all your friends ride bikes too? Do you sort of identify as a cycling man? You know, it's a funny sort of sort of thing, because I think I can certainly remember phases in my life where it's been less of a part of. I think I've always ridden a bike, there was a time, I think, when I lived in California for a couple of years when I was a student out there, and I did have a bike, which probably marked me out as a bit unusual, but I didn't ride it. I don't think I rode it that much. Maybe no one else did. And maybe around about that time, which I guess was mid-20s, but then when I started getting a job in London and used to commute in on the bike, and I was the only person who did in my office, and there was definitely oh, like, it's Jack the bike, sort of the Welsh way of putting it. But then, yeah, since then, and then obviously since doing like the radio show, podcast, writing books about it, it's just become more and more. And then you go through that phase when everyone gives you bike themed Christmas presents. You know, it's just like everything is bike, 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 and you just start, it feels a bit weird, it feels a bit sort of overwhelming. Yeah. Not just coming from yourself, but it's almost actually more from the other people who just put you in that box. Do you feel like you've been put in that box of, like, Gavin the cyclist?
That's an interesting question, that, Jack. I don't know if I've ever thought about it. I would imagine that a lot of them will be say, oh, yeah, he's probably out on his bike, but I don't think that's Gav the cyclist. And that could probably be because, I don't know, it's like yourself, can often be fine doing lots of other things as well. So I do lots of drawing, or you know, years ago when I was a student, you know, I'd be doing lots of skateboarding, because as a student it was just, that was the thing that I picked up on, and it kind of filled in the gaps between my having my bicycle, really. It was that new mode of transport to maybe see the city, but through that I realised that I was only seeing this small portion of the city. Like, if you're walking about, you're discovering all these little corners and these little back alleys of the city, and I thought, this is just like kind of being on a bike, it's just another thing, but the bike takes you so much further. And, you know, all them little back alleys and them cut throughs and the, you know, the no rules mode of transport.
So are you utility skateboarding?
I was
I've never heard of that.
Wow. That's, I think, great. You just coined a new phrase. It probably works about as good in the rain as what my bike did just then.
We've lingered a long time, but there's two guys have come in, had their lunches, and long since gone, haven't they, while we've been lounging around.
Just warming up, but let's just face it, we've just been warming up.
The moment we walked in, you said, oh, we're going to get really warm in here and not going to want to go out again, because it's going to be pissing down with rain again. So we're about halfway around, is that? Or a bit more?
Yeah, I'd say about halfway, yeah. Maybe a bit more, but it, even if we're not, it's, I would say it's easy riding from here on out, yeah.
So where are we now?
We're just up on top of Longridge Fell, on the west side of Longridge Fell, so just outside of Longridge Town, and we've ridden up just above the reservoirs, and we're looking kind of southwest, out towards Preston and Darwin Moors and Winterhill.
It's turned into a lovely day. Blue sky with fluffy clouds and a nice breeze to dry us off.
Yeah, at long, it took a while, but we're there. My feet are almost dry, Jack.
So you've got almost all the way around this 100 kilometres without talking much about your art, which I know is, you know, often the game with artists, that you don't like to talk about it because you want people to look at the art and engage with the art and not listen to you sort of prattle on and trying to explain it in some way. But I think it would be interesting to hear about where you're at and what you've done so far on this project.
instead of trying to contextualise it too much and try and be clever about it, I'll just tell you how it kind of grew organically, I suppose. It was a self-initiated project where I just, while I was out cycling and exploring, that I'd started to see that there was all these views of Preston that I'd kind of had logged in my mind. And I kind of usually always take a camera out, so I started just photographing them. And what I realised was, is I was kind of thinking, I wonder how many of these there are. And also I was kind of building up this collection of these views back to the town where I lived. And the interest in architecture that I've kind of had throughout my work was there, and I was really interested in what buildings were visible and how they were visible and the orientation of the city, looking at it from far and usually from an elevated position. And I just started collecting more and more of these views as I was exploring. I think the lucky part of it was that Preston, when you look down on it, looks like it's in a real flat area because it's near the coast. But because it sits up on the escarpment above the River Ribble, it's almost like just slightly poking a little bit higher than everything else around it. So even if you're a bit lower than it, there's some great views even from the south. So I started collecting these views and I realised that there was about 40 or so, maybe more. And when you kind of see them all maybe together, I thought that's when actually that's a really nice body of work. I don't think individually that they're artworks. It's more as a collection of images that I took and then the routes that were taken to find these images. There's lots of little aspects of it that I really quite like. So they're of an urban environment, but they're all from either a rural or a semi-rural location, and often kind of nondescript location, just like an isolated road out somewhere on a fell or just on down a country lane. And I really like that there's these places on the road that have got this little bit of magic about them, and that only maybe the cyclists can see them because they're the only ones that are just that high enough to pop over the hedge, you know, to see over the hedge or to see over that wall, and the cars are going too fast to see it. And it's just them nice little touches.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things I notice about cycling and taking in views is that you can stop. It's very simple. You can stop on a bicycle anywhere you want and just lean the bicycle up against the wall or a fence or on the floor and look around you. If you try and do that in a car, I mean, unless you're in a very remote place where you can just stop, you know, you've got parking to deal with, you're obstructing other people. First of all, you don't probably see that there is a potential view because you're down there in the car. But also, yeah, once you've decided you might want to have a closer look, you can't because it's gone so fast and you haven't got a place to park up and go and have a look. So you just end up not seeing it. So yeah, your eyes are kind of enhanced on a bicycle because of that very practical ability to stop and look.
It's very difficult to hunt out all these views without doing it by bicycle. I imagine you could do it by car, but you're going to miss so much. It's too difficult, too dangerous. The bicycle seems to me the only way you could really do it. You could walk it, but it'd take you a long time, and there's a lot of and I think we discussed this earlier, the way that the bicycle allows you to go up somewhere and go, no, this is the wrong way, I'll turn around and come back, without it being a real investment of time or energy. I think the bicycle kind of sits in the background. It's kind of like the mode. It's the only way I could have probably done this project. It's not in the forefront of the project, but it sits there in the background, kind of ever present. And when you see it, you can see that it could only have been probably done by bicycle, you know, if you were looking at the routes and how it was done. But it's not in the forefront of the project. Maybe, you know, to the way we see things, the way we perceive things and the architecture around us and the landscape around us is probably what, you know, what people will see at first, really. And the bicycle maybe comes second. There's a lovely little mode by which that this has happened.
Well, we're back in the
city centre, the throbbing hub of Preston. We took a bit of a shortcut on the busy A road.
You were having a good go at drafting that van when you, which you did a magical job of.
I was trying to do an Eileen Sheridan and
I couldn't hold your wheel
and get behind the van. But then we picked up the Guild wheel again.
Yeah.
And that was you showed me the dodgy bit.
The inconsistencies, I suppose, in some of it. There are the maybe the way that some people have interpreted cobble different than others. And maybe we could send you a picture of how that looks.
The technical section.
There is a very, very technical downhill section. I think, in reality, I think that you're ideally supposed to do the Guild wheel the other way, so you'd actually be taking that uphill like the chaps were and pushing your bike uphill. But some inconsistencies sometimes make things a little bit difficult, I think, for beginners.
And then past the fantastic kind of wildlife refuge and bird hives. That place looked amazing. We were in a bit of a rush, so we didn't stop, which is a shame because it looked really nice.
Yeah, that's Brockholes, so it's kind of a nature reserve really that's out on the kind of the reed bed that they've created, and the architecture is fabulous. Won awards for its architecture, and lots of birds being attracted to Preston, which is always good.
And then the last bit back along the river through all these sort of farmland and marshland
and trees,
really nice, straight into the park in the centre of the, which is a beautiful park in the centre of the city.
It really is like a jewel of the city, actually. It's a real great, really great park, and there's then cycleways that come in from the south, from like Bamber Bridge and Lostock Hall, straight into the town centre of Preston, which is really convenient. There's a little bit of work that needs doing, which we're working on, so that we can link up with the hub here at the train station, because there's like a Virgin Trains 200 bike parking hub that's there, that's kind of key fob operated. You pay £5 and that gives you a lifetime membership of using that, and it's all CCTV, which is really great for people either visiting or for people like me that like to nip into town every now and again.
So I can't work out whether you're optimistic or pessimistic or realistic about the future of cycling in Preston. I'm going to have to ask you to get off the fence because you've kind of been on the fence maybe a little bit. Is that fair to say?
I think it probably is. I'd love to say that I'm optimistic. Maybe I should just leave it optimistic. I'm optimistic. There's will, but I think it's a reflection of the bigger picture. It's like everywhere else. It seems a bit insurmountable, so we just kind of chip a little bit off every now and again and hope that eventually it makes that difference. We're in it for the long haul. Maybe they're not, so that's on our side.
And what about your art project? Where's that gonna go next?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, actually, Jack, because I think I'm juggling lots of ideas, and the idea is to maybe build up some kind of cycling archive of the city, but at the same time, I'd maybe like it to be a bit fantastical or maybe based in the future. Maybe that's something I should think about.
And how long is it going on for? When should people check in to see, you know, how where you've got
to? Next year, maybe sooner, but definitely by early next year, I should have something clear in my head of how it should look. And I'm working through kind of lots of different bits of data and information, and I'm kind of loving how abstract some of that data is that comes in, and how it all kind of contributes to a bigger picture.
Well, thanks for showing me cycling in Preston in a day and taking me out into the countryside. I've really enjoyed it, even the rain on the on the Trough of Bowland, and I'd love to come back to do some more riding around here. It's great riding.
Thanks, Jack.
Oh, well, that was so good. My swim, I'm talking about. I leave it to you to decide whether you enjoyed riding with Gavin and me out of Preston and back. But I tell you, that river is warming up. It's like getting into a bath. Oh, my goodness. It's a little bit of a wade out to the deep patch, but once you're in there, it's just so silky, soft water flowing very gently, so you could just swim upstream a little bit and then lie on your back and glide down again. It is textbook river swimming pleasure. So, as I said, I was riding with Gavin Renshaw, and if you want to listen to Gavin and me witter on a little bit more about cycling, you can actually look at us as well. There's a YouTube video of the event that we did in the evening after the ride, where we talked about cycling culture in Preston, cycling infrastructure, and had some interesting questions and comments from the audience as well. It's been, well, nearly a year since I did that, and Gavin's work on the project has moved on a little bit. He has produced a new cycling map of the city of Preston, and I'll put links to his project on the Bike Show website, thebikeshow.net. And I have to say, bringing in artists and creative minds to look at issues surrounding town planning and urban development in the broadest sense, not just particular projects or particular things that are already underway, but really to unpick what is going on and what the future direction of the development of a city could be, is really a positive thing. And I take my hat off to that project. Town planning and urban development can often be really depressing and boring and uncreative, and can result in places that are just not so nice to live in, which is the opposite of what it's meant to do. And bringing in some creative thinking and some people who are willing to question stuff and see things from a different perspective is something that every place should be doing. So I'm going to hop on my bike and go back to work, and catch you another time. Thanks for listening to The Bike Show with me, Jack Thurston. Goodbye.